Have reached your host, Kareema Ali, with the National Coalition of Women of Color in Construction, and we are live from Stone Mountain, Georgia, and I wanted to share with you the topic of this segment of the show. The purpose of social capital and human capital is the key to success. The lack of knowledge and the lack of purpose and the impending tragedy that results from its absence. Purpose creates vision and produces goals and creates change. We can and we will change the face of business. Wanted to line up where our callers are going to be calling in from. We have, based on our social network with our sisters around the country, has been on a point of organizing the new structure for women in construction, women in non-traditional employment. We have also arrived at the type of capital and social network that allows us to be a part of a very phenomenal situation that has taken place in Washington, D.C. And we have gotten an urgent email from one of our partners, Chicago Women of Trades, Lauren Sugarman, in regards to a sign-on letter for women in non-traditional trades and women that are in the construction industry. And this is a matter of urgency because we have also signed on as a coalition to represent women of color that is going to be a transitional team coming in to the Barack Obama's campaign so that we will have a voice on the Hill. And I want to thank our sisters in from Women Work. And we would like to welcome Helen Lurie from Women's Work, who is working.
Hi, Kima.
Hello. Who's working jointly with Wider Opportunities for Women, WOW. Out of D.C., and then we have some other partners that they're working with in collaboration with the National Network of Women's Employment, co-chairs of the National Coalition on Women and Job Training, and we also have, of course, a continuous network of women who are contributing to the understanding that women are part of the problem. I mean, part of the solution, not the problem. We work. So therefore, it says Women Work in the National Alliance of Partnerships and Equality. America works because women work. So, Helen, I appreciate you coming on and putting you on the spot here, but we certainly need to let the rest of the country know exactly what you guys are doing. Can you kind of go over what we were talking about the letter that's been drafted and what we have to expect in terms of what our time limits are, because you guys have been moving really quickly.
Sure. Thank you for giving me that introduction. As you mentioned, I work for an organization that is called Women Work, the National Network for Women's Employment. And, yes, it's a long name, but I think that tells you what we're about. And what we have set out to do is to give input to the transition team that is overseeing President-elect Obama's transition to the White House. We're working in a wide coalition with women's organizations, workforce investment organizations, anti-poverty organizations, to tell the transition team and also members of Congress that women need to have a share in any job creation and benefits that are going to be created by the economic recovery package that they're talking about right now in Washington. As we know, we're going through a recession, possibly a depression, and to kind of bail out the economy, President-elect Obama has proposed a very wide-ranging plan with investments in transportation projects, infrastructure, green buildings, things like that, that he says will create millions of jobs. He has said that he wants to create or save 2.5 million jobs. And we do applaud this ambitious proposal, but we're also concerned that since because many of these jobs are going to be in fields that are non-traditional for women, such as the construction field, which I think nationwide women in construction represent something like 2 to 3% of that field,
exactly.
We're concerned that a lot of these jobs are not going to go to women. So the purpose of this letter that we drafted in a very wide coalition is to let the president-elect and Congress know that they need to put certain stipulations into whatever plan they come up with that will ensure that women do, in fact, get some of those jobs. So if you'd like, I can go through briefly a couple of those stipulations that we want to include.
Okay, go ahead.
Okay, so first we want ambitious goals for hiring women in these non-traditional fields. On a federal level, we're saying that any federal contractor and then local contractors as well that get this federal funding need to hire a certain percentage of women, and that this compliance needs to be enforced by a federal agency that has the authority and funding to enforce it.
That's a great word. That's a great word, the enforcement and the funding instead of the reduction.
Oh, yeah.
OFCCP, that you go in there and there's probably four workers there in the whole building probably.
Yeah, I don't even know if anybody's still employed at that office, but we're hoping that the president-elect and his new administration beef it up under the auspices of the new Department of Labor.
Okay.
And President-elect Obama hasn't named a Secretary of Labor yet, but we're hoping that will be someone who sees the role of the OFCCP positively.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Secondly, we want to make sure that part of the funds for these economic recovery projects are left aside for the recruitment and training of women, because we know from experience that if these opportunities existed for women to be trained and encouraged into non-traditional fields, many more of them would actually go in than are going in right now. Although there are certainly women in the pipeline, there would be many more if we were to devote resources to actively recruiting them. And this is also a good goal from an economic standpoint, because right now we have employers all over the country who are saying we don't have enough skilled workers in many fields, including the construction field, if you can believe that. There's actually going to be a lack of construction workers in the coming years. So women would seem to be a great resource for workers in these fields.
Or business owners. Oh, absolutely, business owners who are, for our regard, that we are business owners in contracting throughout the country that will be able to support the tradeswomen in terms of creating an innovation level of an interdependent environment. Because when you have environments like ours that are networking with tradeswomen organizations, not just networking, we're actually trying to create a melting pot so that tradeswomen, if they are experienced tradeswomen, let's just say they want to go to the next step and they want mm-hmm. to become business owners. So that makes a good relationship that Barack Obama, President-elect Barack Obama, has initiated, stating that we need to talk about Main Street. Well, Main Street is going to hire women who look
right.
like each other. So our fit into this as a coalition with us business owners is that we will be able to partner with the tradeswomen, as we've done in the past, and to empower each other in something like this. And that's why I thought it was a great idea that you guys were able to come on so quickly once I got this from Lauren. And I appreciate you considering coming on so abruptly.
Right, I think that's it's great what you're saying, that all these organizations have to support each other. And,
exactly.
You know, we're in a difficult economic time, So especially organizations owned by women, who hire women, they're basically going to need to support their women workers.
Exactly.
So what we also ask for in this letter is for federal and state programs that help support working women, safety net programs, education access. You know, I read recently that it's getting harder and harder to fund a college education in this country, but even if you talk about an associate's degree or some kind of certificate, it's just getting more and more difficult to pay for that, and the federal government really needs to do something to support both men and women in, you know, getting the education that they need to become part of the workforce and to be able to support their families.
The human service fields, basically.
In the human service fields, yes, child care for the women with children. You know, how can a woman go off and get a job if she's at home with two children that she doesn't have the funding to take care of? How can she get to work if she doesn't have a stipend for transportation? Those supportive services, things like that,
mm-hmm.
are things that need to be funded on both a federal and a local level. So those are a couple of points that we're also asking for. Now, regarding the time frame of this, we don't have a lot of time, in fact. The transition team, President-elect Obama's transition team, is right now taking input from a wide variety of groups across the country. They actually have this great website, change.gov, if you haven't seen it, where any group can submit policy recommendations for the new administration, and they claim that it's a way that you can get a seat at the table. They're trying to do a very open process for groups to give their input. But we've heard through our channels that they really want to get something, input from groups this week, especially when we're talking about economic recovery, because they want to figure out their plans really soon.
And
so
mm-hmm.
right now we have probably about 100 signatures for our letter from national organizations, state organizations, and local organizations, and that's the letter we're going to be sending to the transition team, and we're going to try to do that today.
Yeah.
But later this week we are going to be sending a huge email blast out to members of Congress, all, you know, something like 435 members in the House, and the 100 members in the Senate of the new Congress that's coming in on January 3rd. And for those letters, we are still looking for sign-on. So that's what I would ask for from anybody who's listening or anybody who you, Karima, have contacts with, that they would, if you represent an organization, because we're only looking for organizations to sign on right now, and that could be nonprofits, that can be tradeswomen organizations, that can be unions, that can be any sort of construction organization, business owners, really anybody, you know.
Absolutely.
Community colleges, learning centers, anything under the sun. If you're an organization, you know, please send your name and where you're located, and I can give my email address.
Please do.
I'll compile them, and then we can send them to Congress, and that's the way that your voice can be heard.
Very good. Please let everybody know your email address.
Okay, sure thing. I'm going to spell it out because my last name is hard to spell. My name is Helen Lurie, and that's H-E-L-E-N-L-U-R-Y-I. And my email is HLURYI@WOMENWORK.ORG. So that's womenwork.org. That's the name of my organization.
Okay. And we got on our roundtable, we have callers from 770-947. Welcome, caller. Okay. We have a caller from 219-938. Okay. Caller from 646-885.
Hello?
Yes.
Okay. Welcome,
yes.
Caller.
Thank you.
Caller from 404-274.
Karima, Kelly Chiama.
Okay, welcome. Michelle.
Yes.
Oh, welcome to the call. Thank you. Very good. Caller from 651. Okay. And caller from 404-512.
Hello, thank you.
Okay, great. So I guess everybody was able to, it seemed like everybody was online, and you understand the urgency and what we are trying to assist and be a part of. The topic of the show is the lack of knowledge and the lack of purpose and the impending tragedy that results from its absence. And as you heard Helen say, that this is a matter of urgency, and even though it may look down the line that there are going to be some opportunities for folks to have their voices heard, the time will have ran out when it actually gets to the head of the table, because right now we're in a great position as a coalition of color for women that's in focus in construction. So, Helen, I truly appreciate this, and as I said before, Lauren Sugarman from Chicago Women of Trades, who was on our show back in November 5th, had given us a very strong enlightenment of what was going to be taking place and some of the points that we needed to make. And we also wanted to everybody to know is that this show will be it's archived, and at the end of the show, all of our voices can be played and reviewed for as long as the show exists, and I'm sure it's going to exist for a while. And I want to thank everybody that's on the call. Anybody have any questions for Helen before she rushes off? Hello?
Hi.
Anybody have any questions for Helen regarding the matter with the transitioning team? Any questions?
No, I think we're all clear from my side.
Okay. And,
why don't I just my email one more time just in case somebody didn't
get it. Actually, that is a good idea. I didn't get your spelling, first of all, of your
thing.
Last name.
My last name is L-U-R-Y-I, Lurie. And I'll read out my email. It's hlurii at womenwork.org. Womenwork is all one word.
Okay. And you have a website, too?
Womenwork.org.
Is the website. Okay, great. Okay,
Karima,
great.
Thank you for having me on. I appreciate the opportunity.
I certainly appreciate everything, and you guys have our support, and we will keep moving forward for the congressional listing for the sign-on.
Thank
and,
you. I hope to be in touch with you guys.
All right, then. All right, thank you.
Bye.
Bye-bye. Okay.
Thanks, Karima.
Okay, well.
It was very informative.
Well, the thing I want to discuss with the circle that's here online now, I wanted to explain to everybody that time is of an essence. A lot of people have seen us try to stay focused on issues that are revolving around Atlanta, and it does not really. And I tell people candidly enough that that our focus is not in Atlanta, and it doesn't matter, because unless you are part of the bigger picture, you're not going to be welcome at the table. Now, the National Coalition, to boast a little bit, has created a social network with these organizations over the past 20 years, and our affiliation with them is going to make us the pivotal organization for women of color in contracting in the United States, because the list of individuals that signed on, none of those individuals are construction-related organizations or associations. And so I would hope that people understand that our goal is to be able to have policy reform and change in the industry. And it's collectively, it's not for just women of color, but it's women in general, because it's a trickle-down effect, you guys. It affects every and each one of us. And Michelle, I really appreciate you coming to the show. I thought maybe you had forgotten about me.
No, I didn't.
Okay, Michelle was actually the first person that was going to be on the show, and I thank her. And I wanted everybody to please listen in to a wonderful woman that I had the pleasure of meeting on a couple occasions. But yesterday was very pivotal for me, because I was able to sit and listen to her and hear where our connection comes into play. Michelle owns several businesses and has been has a wide repertoire of just jobs and positions. And so I'd like you all to kind of understand that the story that she told me last night, told us in our group last night, and I'm a tough cookie, almost made me cry. But it's about what we're trying to do. It's about social capital network. I've been preaching and understanding this from the first show when we talked about the Center for Women Business Research on their research, defining what barriers for that have been a part of the women of color in business in general. What barriers are there that's been noted through the research? And Michelle, could you tell everybody the name of the company that you used to have, and then the company that you have now that you are turning into a Mid-Atlantic? And please tell us the story that that got you started on this path. I know you said you have been a part of the nonprofit world back in the early days, and you have been a individual that had worked with some folks over abroad, I believe, in Honduras.
I started out my career back in the 70s. In philanthropy, working for a symphony orchestra and learning all about the aspects of philanthropy that were really important to our economy. I was trained by some of the best people because of the location that I was in. There was a lot of old money, and I was taught a lot about how people thought in relationship to giving and doing philanthropy. So it was a great foundation for me. After working in that realm for a couple of years, I felt that I needed to get into the corporate environment, and so I made a shift in my own career and started working with Federated Department Stores, doing economic research on potential store sites, and then moved into a career in the technology realm with IBM and with Bell South Corporation. But after many years of working in that environment, I really... although I had a role doing some philanthropy from a corporate perspective, I really felt like I wanted to do more from a community-based perspective. And so I retired from that career and moved into working with neighborhoods and communities and started up an organization called Charitable Connections, which is a foundation, and started working with close to 200 faith and community-based organizations from the ground up, and saw that there was a tremendous need in our neighborhoods and communities for participation, both from a philanthropic standpoint, but also from a public policy standpoint. Well, I got very burned out in 2004 and had the opportunity to move to Tennessee, and I thought I was going to retire and go off to the mountains, live on 230 acres, get married, and live happily ever after, not having to deal with any of this anymore. And my fiancé had an advertising company and also was interested in developing 230 acres up against the Great Smoky Mountain National Park into a retreat center. And so I was engaged in that with him, and in the midst of doing that, we were building a road up the side of the mountain, and we're having all kinds of difficulty. And he hit some stone. And the guy that was working on the road said, you know, I don't know whether this is good or bad, but there's all this stuff stacked like bricks from the bottom of the base of our machinery up, and there's probably 3 million tons here. You better go find out whether this is worth anything. And so my fiancé did, and we found out it was, and we ended up starting out in the stone business. Well, two years later, we were about to get married, 2 weeks away from the wedding, and he had a heart attack and died. And left me without a house, without a car, without any money, and with about 14 pallets of stone, and everything on the mountain going to his past family, tied up in probate court. And here I was in the middle of a place where I had no family, no resources, no nothing, going, okay, God, what am I doing here? Well, I had 14 pallets of stone. And I said, okay, I have 14 pounds of stone, and they're on ground. And surely, with all of my skills, I can do something with this. So every day, and this was in November of 2005, every day I would go to the stone yard, and I would sit. And just traffic would come by, because the area that we had the stone yard in, we didn't own the property. My fiancé's best friend did. I would just sit, and traffic would come by, and they would buy stone. Well, I didn't have any equipment that I could work. I had this huge backhoe, but there was no way, if you all would see me, I'm not equipped to run a backhoe. So I would sit at the stone yard, and I would just sell stone as I could, and that's how I made money for the first, month. And as the winter progressed, there was a gentleman that started showing up on the stone yard. He was a friend of the owner of the land. And he would sit there with his dog, and he would just sit there. Never came over to talk to me, just would sit there. So finally one day I went over and I started talking to him, and I found out that he had fourth stage cirrhosis of the liver, and that he was bored, and he was just dying, and he had nothing to do. And I looked at him, and I said, you don't by chance think you could run a backhoe, do you? And he said, well, yeah, I can run a backhoe. He goes, I used to move mobile homes. I used to do all this stuff, but, I've been sick, but I can run a backhoe. I said, okay. So he did not walk very well. He couldn't walk. His back was giving him problems, but he kind of wobbled over to the backhoe, jumped on it, and, boy, could that man run a backhoe. It was unbelievable. It was like his whole life lit up when he got on that machine. He finally had something to do. So he started working on the stone yard with me, allowing me to go out and be able to sell outside of the stone yard and meet new customers and, sell some tractor trailer loads of stone. He would collect the money, but now we had a problem. I had no trailer and I had no truck to deliver stone for the customers who were coming by that wanted it delivered. So the gentleman who was running the backhoe had a couple old trucks, and he horse-traded the two old trucks for a newer truck and a trailer. He rounded up a couple of the former drug addicts in the community, and they started a delivery business for the stone.
Wow.
Okay. And so, but he was always there on the yard, and they would go out and just deliver occasionally, when people would ask, and that's how he made his money. He never charged me anything for working on the stone yard. So over months would go by, and it was getting warmer, and spring was coming, and all of a sudden he said, well, could you come over to my house one night? And I said, yeah, I can come over. Come to find out, he bought himself a new trailer. He was living in a trailer that was just really run down, and he got so excited about what he was doing that he decided to buy a new trailer. So he bought a new place for himself to live. And he was just beaming, because he was hiring all these guys who were coming out of the jail. He was working with them. He was rounding them up. They were listening to him. And his whole life had changed. I mean, he was healthier than he was when I first met him. So over time, unfortunately, the landowner sold the property and sold it to a group whereby I couldn't maintain the retail yard any longer. Mm-hmm. But it had bought me enough time to be able to go into the wholesale market. And so Floyd continued to work with us and help with deliveries and sold stone, even though we didn't have the yard. He would go around to the different job sites, and he'd find people to sell stone to. So he continued on his path. But what I learned from that was that there was a great opportunity for social entrepreneurism and social entrepreneurship. And I really found a passion about it, and I found that there is great opportunity to empower people to life again.
Exactly.
And so what's happened in my life is that the Stone Company, we are shifting the name of the Stone Company and rebranding it.
Uh-uh.
What?
Oh, no, that's go ahead.
Oh, okay. We're rebranding the Stone Company to call it Rocking Your World. And we are going to be opening up some stone yards here in Atlanta, probably within the next year, to be able to offer the same kind of scenario to people who may be jobless currently, and have them work alongside us with urban gardening as well as doing the stonework and maybe even starting some landscape opportunities.
And when you did this wholesale business, you realized that that the rock quarry owners were not pretty big on marketing. So you were able to cut out a niche from these guys' weaknesses, which was not creating a social network and creating a marketing aspect for them. So you began to do the marketing for them, right?
Yes. Yes. As a matter of fact, what was so awesome about going around and meeting all these quarry owners, because just so that you know, I started with zero money, and every single one of these quarry owners offered me a line of credit to be able to do business with them because they knew that I had lost my quarry as well when Jay passed away. So what had happened is I started going out to the quarries themselves and not only marketing to customers but visiting with the quarries once a week. And I was able to teach them things about accounting. I was able to teach them some business skills to bring them up to speed because a lot of them had just developed the quarries out of from being laborers, and they knew very little about doing business. And so with the skills that I had developed over the years, I was helping them because I was sewing back into what they had given to me by allowing me to do business. So it worked into a very nice opportunity, and I brought a lot of business to the quarries that they may not have gotten because I was able to go out and meet with people one-on-one.
But you uniquely built a customer base from behind that as well.
Absolutely. The immense social relationship and social network that has been built out of the start of this business just really showed me the importance of social networking and the importance of how we can really empower one another if we'll take the time to do that. And if we look for the things that we can do for other people and helping their business, they'll help our business too. And it just builds for a strong relationship. They'll send me clients now, and I'll send them business. If there are things that I can't do that they can do better, I'll send it to them. If there are things I can do better and they need more customer attention, they'll send me the customer.
And as a part of what you were doing is that now you've turned into a retail. Your next project is now to restructure your firm and rebranding it, so that the telemarketer that you had that was out there will be a part of your core business level when you bring jobs and businesses here to Atlanta, right?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely. And we've got land that has been donated to our charitable foundation, and so we're going to work very, very closely with our charitable foundation on the development of this rebranded company because we feel like that the opportunities for us to create jobs and provide housing and be able to really impact the community are at the next level of what we want to accomplish. So we're going to combine that all together and create what we're calling a vital living community, which will incorporate jobs, health and wellness, urban farming, teaching people how to get back to their agricultural roots, doing the building construction pieces because we have a 100-unit property that needs to be rehabbed right now. So we have lots of different pieces that are kind of coming together that are going to be great social entrepreneurship components.
And that's what's so interesting is that when we looked at each other yesterday, it almost brought a tear to my eye because I said, oh, my God, this is the only structure that I have tried to throw into our existing, even our mission statement as a coalition is social capital and human capital networks, building those systems that will allow you to be a sustainable business. And this is a testimony from somebody who went from having $0, absolutely,
yes.
And you guys need to see her. She is not going to get on a backhoe, I'm telling you.
Well, you know, it's really many years ago I learned that you can create something from nothing because it's never nothing. You know, I looked at those 14 pallets of stone, and I saw, you know, maybe $1,000 worth of inventory, maybe, okay? and how do you start a business with $1,000 worth of rocks? Okay, it's just not always feasible. But when there are many more assets than money assets that you can utilize to help leverage what you do. And I learned that lesson very quickly by, you know, the gentleman who had the land allowed me to use the land at no cost. So that came to me. And the gentleman who ran the backhoe, he came, he didn't expect to be paid. He created his own money.
Mm-hmm.
He found a place where he could make his own business and make his own money. And that's what we need to realize, is that people have a lot more power than we recognize sometimes. And it's just allowing them to grow into who they are and finding their place and then seeing how it fits.
Picking you up here?
So I think there's a lot that can be done in neighborhoods and communities, but we have to allow people to be in a position of being empowered and helping them to see what their assets are.
And that is the beautiful thing, I think, when we talk about a little bit more, those linked social networks has now created you an opportunity to manage your retail business, because now you have projects that you're building. You have houses that are, in essence, that your business only faded, a third of when you saw this taking place in 2006, you were able to leave the quarry and go and develop this new section of your business to sustain you in 2008, right?
Yes. What, you really, when you're an entrepreneur, you really have to be prepared for changes. And the stone business is probably one of the worst. As I was explaining last evening, it's a very cutthroat business. There are, a lot of people buy for price, but there are a group of people that are looking for the customer service. They're looking for the quality. They're looking for the consulting aspect of it. And it took me a minute to find out that I had that capability, but it showed up, and I found that, that's an integral part of the work that we're doing and what describes who we are. But the retail component and the wholesale component will be important. It's just, they're not viable bread-and-butter pieces right now because of the way the economic situation is. So when you're an entrepreneur, you have to be willing to shift and make changes. And I know you guys know that real well in the business that you're in, having to be flexible and have different moving parts to the business.
And we certainly have had a transitional stage with the company. And the part that I thought that was so interesting is that with your base of individuals, we kept seeing a shift of the industry, especially the residential industry. Most people would have gotten a little bit nervous, but you started planning in the time of peace, pretty much.
Yes.
And
yes.
So you were able to create, keep that same base of folks, because stone was something that went on to homes that you have on your brochure of,
mm-hmm.
$4 or $5 million homes, and people are still building those type of homes, right?
Yes, as a matter of fact, today, the builder that I'm working on my current project with, he called me up. He said, by January, we're breaking ground on another one. So there, what I said last evening was there are still homes being built. There are still people with money. There are still people with cash that can build those homes. It's just a matter of having the reputation and being positioned to handle the job. And I think you guys were talking about that with C.J. Hearn last night,
mm-hmm.
And being positioned for what's going to happen with the oncoming infrastructure pieces that the federal government are going to start putting in place. You guys will be well positioned for that, and you've worked at it, though, and you've gotten ready. And now, when it starts coming down, you'll be well positioned to take on some of that work and oversee that work.
And the thing that I saw was that, and I looked at you and I said, you linked the social networks and created that human capital network, because let's going back to the story, those folks that were working with you, you were able to have accounts open in, 18 accounts with no credit based on human capital?
Right. Based on my word, and do you know what? Because the business is the way it is, a lot of people don't pay when stone shows up, and it's very costly because you have to pay for the transportation whether or not you get your money, Okay. So when somebody, when they trust that you're going to pay them, that's a huge piece of social capital. Huge. So when that truck showed up with that stone, they knew that whether my customer was going to take that stone or not, that I was going to pay them. And that built my ability to expand the credit lines. I'm now buying stone all over the country where people are shipping out $10,000 worth of stone on my word and not expecting payment for 15 days.
And, Michelle, I think when I tell people that our business, which is CECI Services, when I say that we have accounts with the folks that we have, and it's based on my word, and that's something that that everybody should know, that we're a second-generation contractor, and my mother has always said a woman's word is all she has.
That's
is
right.
That, is that not right, Ms. Freeman?
Yes, that's correct.
And so we build on that, and you go by, and this comes into the next level of understanding who you are. You also are an ordained minister as well.
Yes, I am.
And so, therefore, that faith, for the sisters that are listening, faith without, what is it called? Faith without?
Works.
Works. There you go. Is what?
Dang it.
Right. So, therefore, our purpose, we have to have a purpose to create a vision and produce goals that creates change. And so everybody always asks me, well, what's the topic of the show? Do you have people lined up? And I never, believe it or not, you guys, I don't have a script for this. This is something that is charged to have. And I walk around and do all the things I'm supposed to do in business. And I'm not bragging. I'm just telling you how good God is. It's at the end of the year, and I want everybody to understand that God has been good no matter what you think you have lost. And I certainly have lost a lot of things in one sense, but I've gained a human capital network and a social capital network of folks that I've had known for years to be able to pick up the phone and say, Lauren, I need you to do the show for me. And I want you to do this for me. And she'll say, well, yeah, okay. And then we had Helen on from, Women's Work based on Lauren Sugarman. She absolutely said, hey, we'll put you guys' names down as a sign on. You know, and those are the networks that is going to make the coalition one of the most pivotal, strongest organizations in the country. And is not based on anything other than our faith and our understanding in what I said that I would always speak out is a charge to keep I have. We must, as business owners, as women in our community, serve our community, because if we keep looking at all the things, you know, we have some people that have issues about different things. The one thing that Michelle said, when I stop having different issues about things, the world opened up for her. She's sitting here with a charitable organization that is looking to seek out and work in the community. She has created a network of architects for presentation so that she can now go anywhere in the country and ship her stock anywhere, anywhere in the country. She has become an expert in brokering this stone and been able to find something that a lot of men do not, I'm not trying to put the men down, but they do not have a knack for trying to match up anything. You know, they're not trying to. Michelle, I think you go out and you match up. They said, well, can you match this stone up? And you,
yeah.
I think that was a niche that you etched out of the.
Exactly.
Of a business situation, a business scenario. So you now can go in and look at a house and say, okay, I can make that work, you know. And so you've been able to create those smaller levels of, you know, a business point that people would not look at normally as being a revenue stream for you, you know.
Right.
I'd also like to get into the property of the community development a little bit, if you don't mind. That piece is going to be wonderful, and that area is going to be located where?
It's at the corner of Bolton Road and Martin Luther King Jr. Toward Fulton Industrial. It's a mile away from Charlie Brown Airport and a mile away from Fulton Industrial Boulevard. Would you like a story on that one, too?
Because oh, please.
That actually was incredible. I really didn't want to come back to Atlanta. okay? I was happy up in my little cabin on the mountain that my friends had allowed me to live in for 18 months after Jay passed away. And I was talking to God up there, and I was happy selling my stone and doing what I was doing. And the Lord said, nope, you're going back to Atlanta. You're going back to Atlanta. I said, God, I don't want to go back to Atlanta.
I like working in my pajamas. Is that what you told us last class? I like working in my pajamas.
Looking out over my mountain, and I'm happy. I'm absolutely happy. I got a great church family. I have everything I've ever wanted. Just give me a board, 5 acres and a tractor, and I'll be happy. But no, that was not his idea. I said, Lord, but I don't have a house. He said, Michelle, I'm going to give you a house. I said, okay, all right, God. Well, a friend of mine who's in the real estate business called me up and said, look, Michelle, I have 18 houses I just bought wholesale from HUD. And would you come pray over these houses for me? Because I need good tenants in them, or I need to sell them. But I need some help here, some prayer support. So I said, okay, I'll come down and do that. So I came and prayed over these 18 houses one Saturday. Okay, we did them all in one day.
Okay.
And there's one house that I came to that it didn't make sense that it had sold as a HUD house because everything in it was done. It needed no repairs except for, you know, some driveway work, but that was no big deal.
Mm-hmm.
So I went back to my mountain house, and I said, oh, God, are you telling me that this is the house I'm supposed to be getting? Because I said, I don't want to leave the mountain. I don't want to – I just don't want to get out of my comfort zone here. But if this is what you want, that's fine. So all I had was $2,500 for a down payment. I had no credit, couldn't get a loan, but I got the house.
Oh, my goodness.
Okay, I got the house, and the funny part is the house sits on a hill in the middle of a bird sanctuary in the middle of the city of Atlanta. Okay? So I got my, you know, God has a sense of humor with me. So I came back, and sure enough, this apartment project is in bad condition 2 streets away from where I live.
Wow.
And they're dumping, and finally, October of last year, they found a dead child in the building from gang activity.
Oh.
And so the community came together, and I started to participate and go to court to go against the banks because they were having trouble uncovering who owned this property because it was a mortgage fraud situation. So I started going to the court date to try to help the court pressure from the community, you know, getting the banks to do right and get it fixed up and whatever. And the banks were really frustrated because the court was forcing them to put about $48,000 a month worth of security on the property because of the finding the dead body. And the banks really didn't want to be in the middle of all this. So with the pressure from the courts, the banks decided that they wanted to donate the property. So the banks started looking to Habitat for Humanity and all these different big organizations, and none of them wanted to take the property. And the community really wanted the property. They said, we have a nonprofit, but, you know, we're just not really ready to take it yet. So I get up in court, and I said, look, I have an 11-year-old nonprofit organization, and we'll stand up and we'll take the property. And the bank said, great. So it took us about 9 months to untangle the property, and I was getting nervous. I was getting very nervous because they still had $48,000 a month of security on the property, and there was no way that our charitable foundation was in a position to spend that kind of money to keep the property, you know, secure. So slowly but surely, the bank was pushing me into a position of taking possession of the property. And finally, in August, they transferred it without asking me. They just put it in our name and removed the security overnight. I mean, just removed them. So here I am going, okay, Lord, what next? So we have the property, and we now have a vision for the property with the community. Where the community is securing the property. We're on it every day and not paying $48,000 a month.
Right.
And we are, you know, we do have liability insurance. The community's come together to do the lawn maintenance and everything, and we're getting ready to convert this property into what we're calling a vital living center. And it will be a project that will build capacity for organizations in the community as we build out this project. So we've got lots of nonprofits in the community that are doing wonderful things, and so we will have a mixed-use, mixed-income center. We're going to have an organic grocery store, an organic restaurant. We have worked out a negotiation with Fort Valley State and Good Shepherd Community Church to provide urban gardens in all of our common areas to lower the maintenance cost on the property so that the people who either buy or rent from us will not have to have a great deal of overhead.
Right.
We're going to put in a 3-acre orchard and grow fruit trees. And we're going to have a health and wellness component that the cost will be offset partially by being able to fly in celebrities and athletes to participate in the health center. So the cost to the people that are living in the community will be on a sliding scale basis. And it's alternative and complementary medicine based. So we have a huge vision. And we're partnering with lots of nonprofits right now to get each component down. But I'm very excited about what this is going to look like because we're not interested in gentrifying the community.
Mm-hmm.
We have lots of issues over here. We have 37 inmates a day being dumped on Fulton Industrial Boulevard with $25 and no place to go. We have drug trafficking. We have prostitution. We have a lot of issues in the community, but our goal is not to push it somewhere else. Our goal is to bring organizations together for purposes of regeneration and reintegration of people back into the population in productive manners. And so we're going to reach out to the populations of people that are around here and bring them in, help them with housing, but first help them with jobs and economic capacity. And we have lots of partners and are looking for more. And we're probably going to be facilitating a meeting in January
right.
to get everybody to the table to start assigning tasks and jobs and roles for everybody within the collaboration.
Okay, you know you have the coalition's absolute support on everything.
Well, I was ecstatic about meeting you all last evening, and I'm very much looking forward to what we all can accomplish because this is not about our organization. This is about bringing a new vision to community.
Our community.
Absolutely.
That is absolutely, and I always say, a charge to keep. I have a God to glorify who gave his son for my soul to save and fit it
Amen.
For the sky.
Amen.
So, that is,
and we've got to restore some care and compassion back into our neighborhoods and communities.
Where's your neighborhood?
We're in the Adamsville community.
Okay.
It's NPUH, Neighborhood Planning Unit H, and we're the area from 285 almost to Fulton Industrial Boulevard on along Martin Luther King Jr. We go almost down to Cascade and all the way up to Hollowell Parkway.
Oh, wow.
Ms. Freeman is from Indiana, but let me tell you what that area is. Remember when you left the airport and we told you don't leave the airport and you went to traveling and we had to come get you off of this area and there was a bunch of people walking around that area right there.
Okay.
Yeah, she knows that area.
Well, I have to tell you, it has been a very interesting experience. We've put a call out to some developers to engage a developer because we have no experience in doing development, so we wanted to get some expertise. And I was led to a developer who is developing 3,000 acres over in North Augusta, South
mm-hmm.
Carolina. And so he came out to take a look at the area. Well, he came out, and he was accosted by four prostitutes. We had a couple other developers come out, and they, you know, do a tour of the area, and Fulton Industrial is on part of that. They all got accosted by four prostitutes.
Oh, wow.
And I said, oh, we're getting a real reputation here, aren't we? I think he scared a few of them away.
You know what? What makes it so interesting is that with the stimulus packet, this will be an ideal area. Because if we ideally, I think we're talking about going green and making everything a green project.
Absolutely.
And so with, you know, President-elect Barack Obama is basically going to receive, actually, this show tonight, being uploaded right when the show ends, to our sisters in D.C. so that this can be a systematic footprint. Again, our community is in shambles based on not caring anymore, unless a lot of people got greedy and forgot that, you know, our purpose in life is to be a steward and to serve our fellow man. And so, you know, I don't propose to be the best folk in the world to kind of lead anything, but I do know that in change, you know, people have to be able to change within, and they have to understand that their purpose. So you have understood your purpose in life. You got
it. It's taken me 50 years.
and can you please tell everybody your last name again?
It's Uchiyama. It's Japanese.
Okay.
But I have a real good story here. I was born a Jew, raised a Catholic, became a Protestant when I married, and was ordained as a Pentecostal minister. And I travel overseas to work with Muslims.
Wow.
And I tell you, God does have a sense of humor, doesn't he? But I certainly appreciate anybody that have any questions for Michelle. Michelle, what number are you on? Are you 770?
I'm at 404.
Okay. You got a caller from 770-947?
No, 404-274-2406.
Yeah, we have a switchboard. I'm asking
a
caller from 770-947. Do you have any comments?
This is Joe Garvey. I was very impressed with the callers tonight. I'm the one from 947.
Okay.
Very impressed.
Mr. Garvey is and his wife are our new Maryplan planners and all of that. Welcome to the call, Mr. Garvey.
Thank you. Yeah, my wife Carol does Maryplan. That's a consumer-driven health care. And consumer-driven is not insurance. It's a very cost-effective alternative to the high cost of health insurance and dental care. And consumer-driven is actually a contract between the doctor and the patient. And we're just having phenomenal success helping people that are burdened with the high cost of health insurance. Last month, 500,000 people lost their jobs. They're in the unemployment line and having to pay COBRA health insurance. And the average family, let's take a family of five, and the parents are in their 40s, the cost is going to be anywhere from $600 to $1,000 a month for that COBRA health care. Ameriplan has a great solution. How about up to 87% off doctor visits, lab fees, hospital stays, ancillary care like MRIs and CAT scans, dental, vision, prescription, chiropractic, nurse line, podiatry, etc., for only $39.95 a month.
Wait. You can...
This is Carol.
Okay.
Ms. Freeman, this is Carol Garvey. These are folks, I'm sorry, these are folks who are have my blood in them, but ladies, remember Mrs. Garvey? We talked to her for like 2 hours. This
okay.
Is her husband.
Okay.
Okay. And so you guys.
Okay, I have that information. Okay.
Oh, yeah, it's on the site now. It's on the website under the health and wellness. Thank you. Absolutely. I want all the callers to forgive my family.
No problem. Ladies and gentlemen, this is Michelle. I'm going to have to sign off this evening. I apologize. I have another meeting to get to.
Michelle,
but I've enjoyed talking with you all, and I am looking forward to talking with you more on Saturday.
Absolutely. And you have my undivided attention. As I told you before, I said I could hug you, and you said I could hug you, and I said I could kiss you. So,
hello, Michelle, are you there still?
I am.
Michelle?
I am. Yes.
Yeah, thank you so much for your story. My name is Michelle also. I'm in Minnesota in the snow and cold.
Oh.
But I was really impressed with your story, and I'm just so excited to hear about all the wonderful work you're doing.
Well, I'm excited to talk with you all and connect with you all, and I'm sure we'll be meeting again very shortly.
Yes, we will. Thank you.
All right. I'll talk to you Saturday, Karima.
All right. Thank you.
All right. God bless.
Everybody, we're going to take like a few seconds, and please stay on the call for a moment.
I thought I had it on mute the whole time, but I guess.
Or an empty tree that you never want your mother to need. And finally, I found somebody who fit perfectly. You're everything that I dreamed you'd be. And I'll be what you need, cause I'm playing for keeps, baby.
Okay, welcome back, everyone, to the call. Mr. Garvey, I see that you've excited the rest of the callers, and I certainly appreciate you hanging on and listening
in.
And I certainly appreciate the introduction to our folks who don't look at the website that changes almost every other day. But one thing I your business, and you and I had talked about this, and I appreciate you staying on with us. And we talked about some of the things that a lot of women do not understand as business owners that we need to have a part of our consortium of resources is a person like yourself that does financial planning, long-term disability. And the one thing that we discussed was key man insurance and
sure.
Understanding that. And I was hoping that maybe you could enlighten us about the strategies in which, aligning and positioning yourselves as business owners, outside of the discount levels of being able to sustain a day-to-day, household income based on the fees that we talked about a moment ago. But as far as the long-term planning and positioning that a lot of us have made mistakes in, and that key man insurance and what we can do to continue to work with you and strategize as our business grow when this depression leaves or recession.
right.
Okay.
That's a great input. Now, a lot of people are concerned about the economy and really worried about their future. And look at how many people in a matter of months lost their retirement plans. Pension plans have dissolved and 401ks that are invested in stocks dropped dramatically. And you want to be able to, if you're insuring a key person or you're using deferred comp, we call that golden handcuffs in the industry, where you want to keep a key person on with you. You give them a deferred compensation so they stay with you, so that when they retire, there'll be a big lump sum for them. But if they get promoted to heaven, the company doesn't have the economic loss. So that's what we call key person or key man insurance. There's an insurance policy that has cash value benefits, and you want to have the best possible cash value benefits. And I have one of our systems is just phenomenal, and it's called our private retirement plan or a key man retirement plan, deferred compensation also. But I have a presentation. How much time do I have? I can read this and help everybody understand in detail what this is.
25 minutes. Go ahead.
Okay, excellent. In retirement concerns, people are worried about Social Security. Where's that going to be? Only 21% of people are confident they're going to have enough money to retire. And I don't know about you guys, ladies, but I don't want to spend less money after retirement. I want to live comfortable. And most people don't have time to research investment opportunities. and the IRS restricts and limits retirement savings. So a lot of people picture they're going to have to work after retirement at Walmart or work till they die. But our company here, we help people retire with dignity, and it's our responsibility to custom tailor retirement products to meet the individual needs of each client by diligently seeking retirement vehicles which yield maximum returns and minimum risk. So if we could show you through the key man, through the deferred compensation, through private retirement plans, a vehicle that accumulates money without risk to your principal, a plan that guarantees both your principal and a return on your principal, guaranteed to get great stock market yields when the stock market goes up, but no loss when the stock market goes down. Your growth is tax deferred, so there's no tax on your earnings. You have a tax-free income at retirement, and it's free from IRS limits and requirements. So a great combination of strategies there. And a lot of people think they can make money from sale of their business. Hopefully that'll have a value to it when you retire. Or Social Security, who knows where that's going to be. 401ks, IRAs, SEPs, or pensions, they've been troubled recently. Or personal investments. So you could save in the stock market, the banks, or the life insurance industry. But with the stock market, there's no guarantees. It's like gambling. We've seen that dramatically happen recently. Picking the right stocks, you can't always know what's right out there. Knowing there is a bear market or a recession, and most mutual funds underperform. You can't always win at that game. Banks really limit your rate of interest. Interest is taxable on your CDs. Inflation, it doesn't quite keep up with inflation. And there's penalties, big penalties for early withdrawal out of CDs from banks. The life insurance industry, before 401ks, that's where many people save for retirement. It's always been safe, even during a depression. No one's ever lost any money. Poor returns in the past, but times have changed. There's new products called retirement policies and retirement annuities that are being used with the key person, the deferred comp, and the private retirement plans. Here's our for our company, retirement plan criteria. They ought to be safe, they ought to have excellent return, they have to be tax deferred, and they have to be tax free at the end. So we have a certain products that meet that vehicle. The private retirement plan, life insurance acts as a collection vessel. It's actually a protective umbrella from taxes. The IRS blesses cash buildup in life insurance. It's the only retirement plan that's tax deferred and tax free at withdrawal.
And you can also use that. You can also use that same plan if you wanted to draw out of that, say for an investment level, and not have any penalties from that as well, right?
Absolutely, that would be a loan against your cash. And let's say you had $100,000 cash on $1 million life policy, and you wanted to take out $50,000 to start a business. All that would happen, that's tax free, and your life insurance face amount would drop by $50,000. So you'd still have $950,000 in life insurance that would be tax free at death, but the cash value's yours to borrow. You can pay it back. There's no penalties. There's no interest. It's yours to keep. And
it diversifies your portfolio in a sense too, in terms of being
absolutely.
Able to
you can use it for collateral, okay. You know, for purchasing a business or buying properties or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
So you have high cash accumulation, and the returns are linked to the S&P 500 index, or there's other indexes too that it can link to. So give you a quick history of the S&P. You know, it started back in 1923, and it's 500 of the top stocks. It represents about 70% of the stock market value. And it's outperformed most mutual funds, averaged about 11.2% over the last 20 years. And stocks and sectors rotate like, you know, in the top 500, there was like Pan Am at one time, or some of the, like Delta was in the top 500, but now they're not. So it's always a rotating market. So when the market's up, the S&P is always up, guaranteed. There's a book written by Douglas Andrew. It says that modern cash value life insurance can be designed to accumulate and store cash safely, provide tax-favored living benefits, and earn an attractive rate of return. Not only does he recommend it, but he owns it. And the nicest feature is that the cash values never leave the protective umbrella of the insurance company, yet you have the potential to participate in the market when it's experiencing growth. So I have a chart here. It's showing up and down years. Like in 1995, the market went up 34%. But in 2003, it went down 23%. So even with the pros and cons of the stock market, it still has an average performance of 11.2%. And if you can get that 11.2% tax-deferred or tax-free, you're way ahead of the curve.
Exactly.
So this guarantees your principal, has the stock 500 growth, but no losses, 1% minimum interest. So if you have a downturn year, they guarantee to give you 1% into your portfolio, even if it's a minus 34% year. So you get stock market returns with none of the risk. And so it's not a security or a stock, but it's linked to the stock market movement. It pays you 100% of the S&P, you know, and then 1% minimum, which is awesome. So the interest is locked in. So let's say you had a $100,000 in your portfolio, and the stock market grew 10%, you'd have $110,000. But if the stock market dropped 10%, you'd still have $100,000 plus 1%, so $101,000. So it's an amazing combination of protection right across the board. And
the protection level for this is it recession proof as well?
Absolutely. It's a guarantee. See, what's interesting about insurance companies is they have to put aside dollar for dollar the face amount that's part of your portfolio. So if you have a $1 million policy, they have to have $1 million in liquid funds put aside to guarantee that. Where the banks, I think Obama just, Congress just approved to raise the minimum guarantees from $100,000 to $250,000.
Yeah, people were taking money out like crazy because they were like, move your money because it's not going to be insured.
There's no limit. As long as you have that face amount, you know, that money's in there and it's guaranteed, so you're never going to have a losing year. And so we always ask, do you think the taxes are going up or down in the future? Well, there's no guarantees there. So here's a sector of the IRS code called Executive Bonus 162A. The impact on the company is it's tax deductible. So if they're insuring a key man, it's a tax deduction for them. They can legally discriminate on who gets it, so they can give it to one person and not to another and not have any legal liabilities.
Let's talk about that real quickly. That key man insurance, that's a way of leveraging just in case it's a wife that that wants to buy out your business. You can use that as a leveraging to buy the wife out so that you won't lose your business.
Right. So let's say the key man had a $1 million policy, mm-hmm. and the company was the beneficiary. They could use part of that $1 million to buy out, you know, give to the wife, her husband, and so that's definitely a leveraging tool, no question about it. And there's probably cash value in there too, on top of the $1 million of life insurance. There's no administrator expenses for the company and no reports to the IRS. So that is very clean. It's unlike an SEP or IRAs or 401ks, there's no reports to the IRS.
So you're talking about three things: building equity, building a portfolio, and using that also as a cash value for business startup or just to expand your business with no penalties.
Absolutely, absolutely. And then plus the golden handcuffs, it kind of keeps your key person there because they know when they retire that cash value can be theirs. And it's amazing. So before you retire, you know, if someone were to get promoted to heaven, there's no income tax on the money. Disability, or cash crunch, there's flexibility. You can borrow money from it. Emergency loans, or you can stop paying into it. It can pay for itself once it reaches a certain momentum of growth. That thing will take off with or without money being put into it. And early retirement, there's no restrictions on when you can retire. That's your choice. And unlike the IRAs tell you 59 and a half is the retirement age before you can pull it out without a penalty, there's no problems there. So,
can the ladies take some of their, like they got 401s, can they, or IRAs, can they take that and restructure that back into a key man?
They can. They can take. They can roll over money into the program if they like.
Mm-hmm.
You know, put in cash contributions. You know, it's amazing when you put a cash contribution into the annuity side of it. It grows dramatically, and we can run out reports, hypothetical reports that'll show you with and without cash contributions on top of your monthly. So here's I'm going to use an example. Here's a 40-year-old that's investing $1,000 a month. That's $12,000 per year until, or $300,000 total contribution by age 65. So keep that in mind. They put in $12,000 a year, $300,000 by age 65. That's 25 years. So the cash value at the end of the program is $806,000. But because that cash value is growing dramatically in a tax-deferred scenario, if they were to annuitize it and take out $82,000 per year, that would go all the way to age 100, $82,000 a year tax-free income. Now, if it were a taxable income, it would be equivalent to $120,000 a year. But they put in $12,000 a year, they're taking out $82,000 a year.
That's a three-time multiplier there.
That's more than that, seven times multiplier. And so the total tax-free income received by age 85 would be $1.64 million. Well, they put in $300,000, they took out $1.6 million. And there's a death benefit at age 85 of $600,000. So the total benefits received tax-deferred and tax-free at age 85 is $2.2 million. That is a 23.7% pre-tax annual yield. That's because of the tax advantages, the yield just increases dramatically. The 30-year-old had a 34.7% pre-tax annual yield, and the 50-year-old had a 14.7% pre-tax annual yield. So it's really amazing ability to retire with dignity. So people ask me, what are the downsides of this type of program? Well, you don't want to surrender it. You want to keep paying into it. This is a long-term investment. There are surrender charges if you just cancel everything.
Mm.
You know, there's cost of insurance, of course. If someone has a problem with their health, the COI, the cost of insurance, might be higher.
Mm.
But if you're average health, it's very low cost over that 25 or 30-year period till retirement. Average depends on your retirement age.
Well, the average, I got a question, Mr. Garvey. If the average, let's say the average member of Coalition is right at 40, 41 years old.
Right.
I mean, you're talking about, you know, business owners giving another, 15 years or 20? Yeah, nobody wants to go.
15 to 25 more years till age 65, you know. So, you know, it depends on how long they want to work. But if they went to 65, that would be 25 more years. But if you give this thing 10 or more years, you got yourself a freight train that cannot be stopped because of the accumulation and continuation of interest and interest compounding on top of itself. So it's an amazing combination of benefits.
So a measly $1,000 a month that goes into it could, for somebody that's in their 40s, I'm not trying to get you to do the math, but if they did that for 10 years, it would become a nest egg for them when they turn, say, 51 or 52 years old.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And then especially if they start putting in cash lump sums, such as an inheritance or a 401k rollover or something into it, you start dumping cash into that thing, it turns into a real powerful resource of income.
Do they have to be consistent? Can they just put a lump sum and say that they want this, they put it in, say, in a special account, and it's automatically drafted each month for that one purpose?
It sure can. There's a lot of flexibility there. You know, some people pay month to month on a regular basis. Other people pay different amounts annual. The only thing the insurance company requires is what is your starting factor. So let's say $1 million would have a minimum contribution of $1,000 a month. Let's just use that as an even number. You know, that's whatever the cost of insurance is on that $1 million, you want to at least pay into that for that month or for that year to just so you don't have a chance to for it to lapse.
Okay.
But you have certain limits of how much you could put in per year on top of that to keep it within the IRS regulations. But
what
that's something we as the financial advisors, we keep you in touch as to our recommendations and maximum limits and minimum limits, and we keep you on top of that game.
Okay, really. That makes a lot of sense, because therefore there's somebody that is personally overseeing the transitions and they're keeping up with all the different rule changes. Because are we going to be affected? Could this ever be affected by the new tax laws that may hit in order to sustain the recession level? Would that be
the insurance lobby is so strong? I usually you don't see dramatic changes in insurance regulatory issues. The one of the statements, though, from the insurance industry is if the rules did change, we would guarantee that anyone who has an existing private retirement plan would be grandfathered in. It would be just the new people that start would be affected by the new plans. So the grandfather rule would go into effect to protect the existing clients.
Okay.
And that's a good thing.
All right. And we look at the new folks, because there's going to be a cleansing, I call it. You're going to have a new amount of individuals that are going to be coming in. I say military. And it's just, hypothetically, folks who are getting out, who are contacting the coalition, who are saying, okay, we want to have some kind of information about your health and wellness. And this is something that we're going to continue to add as we continue to add benefits to the site. We could also get you to do a possible workshop maybe once a month on maybe a webinar or something like that.
Webinar would be great, absolutely. I have a PowerPoint presentation and all kinds of support from Game Plan. Well, Game Plan is a financial group that has tax attorneys and accountants and a whole plethora of people, and I'm affiliated with them, so we'd be able to bring in the best minds in the financial industry to help any segment of the population get educated. And that's my job, is to help people get educated so that they can plan properly, and I have a real heart for that.
And the last thing about the long-term disability that we were discussing just briefly, that we can also do that because we're about to run out of time here in about 7 minutes. But
no problem.
I certainly appreciate the fact that we really have to, I went to a meeting and I sounded dangerously educated just based on based on the PowerPoint presentation that you took me to, and I wanted to let you know that we have our chairman of the board, Maggie Freeman, online with us, and our
hello Maggie.
Hi, how are you?
And
great, meet you.
Owens, our executive director, who's going to be definitely calling you because she's kind of retired a little bit now these days.
Excellent. So we have a variety of packages, but we try to custom tailor it for everyone. In fact, I've on the private retirement plan and the key man stuff, we've been seeing anywhere from, say, a minimum of $250 a month, and I've done as much as $1 million contributions. So it has a great flexibility in the contribution levels, but it's usually based on the face amount of the life, and then we build it from there.
Okay. And that's ideally can organizations build on something like that? Could that be where, like the association, the coalition could build? Do associations build like that, or only businesses?
No, associations. Yeah, the IRS has certain regulatory laws, and associations. We would look at them on an individual basis. But I say yes to that. Associations can build on that.
Yeah, because we were thinking about on our executive level that only executive lifetime board members could be, utilize that based on some of the projects that we're doing to vest into the coalition so it can have some sustainability.
Absolutely. We can bring our tax attorney into that. He knows the latest regulatory laws, and we'll definitely make it work, though. But I believe so. I think that's a great thing for the association.
Yeah, and the discount thing, I tell you, people stopped breathing when you went to going into the Ameriplan. And I think the worst plan you have is, so let's say we have a lot of students or young folks that just may be making minimum wage. You have one policy that starts at $19.95, right?
Yeah, the for an individual dental plus package, it's $14.95. Saves up to 80% off dental, vision, prescription, and chiropractic.
That's
our bestseller.
Yeah, some of our younger members that are like, you know, 19, 20, 21 years old. Do they have to be 21 in order to be a or can they start it at 19 or 18? What's the
To be a business partner with Ameriplan, it would be 18 years old or more. To save money, any age. There's no age limit.
Okay. All right. And I know that you guys are have been getting back and forth with us, and we appreciate the constant contact. And can you give folks your website to go to?
On the dental side, they would go to www.dentalplanrx. That's dentalplanrx.com.
Okay. And for the financial planning and the-
I will send you an email on that. I've have one under construction that has some latest technologies on it. I'll get that to you.
Okay. All right. And I wanted to thank everybody that stayed on the call. Wanted to get the email website for 219. Do you have a website you want to?
Yes, www.youpreventbiz.com. That's health and wellness.
Okay. And you're going to be working with the Garveys on the health and wellness development level for our benefit. So we thank you for that. And caller from 650, do you have a website? Caller from 651?
Oh, I'm so sorry. I thought you said 650. This is Michelle. I'm actually on the line on behalf of Janora. Janora, website, please. Just a moment. I'm sorry, Karima.
That's fine.
CECI service.
Okay, very good. Very good. Very good. And, Michelle, we certainly appreciate you staying on, and we got a caller that keeps calling from 111111.
I think that's the internet.
That's the internet. Okay.
I'm on the internet.
Okay, that's you always doing that. Well, I certainly appreciate it. Ladies and gentlemen, we have about 2 minutes left, and I appreciate everybody, letting everybody know that we will have a show next week as well to close out the new year. And, you know, again, this show is archived, and please feel free to go back to it. And you can also go and look at the ncwcc.org, and you'll be able to utilize any of the callers that have ever been on the show for the last 3 months, their website, and access them as well. So I want to tell everybody Merry Christmas. If we don't talk again until next year, which I'm sure we are, because I believe that we still have another 3 weeks left before the New Year's. I'm counting that.
Well, I wanted to thank the gentleman for his wonderful presentation. I really appreciate that because I still have a lot to learn about financial planning and investment. So I wanted to thank him for his time. And,
my pleasure.
All right, ladies.
Michelle.
Thank you very much.
This is Michelle from Minnesota.
Thank you, Michelle. You guys have a wonderful day.
All right, thank you.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Bye-bye.
let it out slowly, please. If it's a dream, don't pinch me, baby. Could you let me sleep? As long as I see your face, I don't want to be awake. I count sheep forever if you promise me. You're never changing, your love remains the same no matter what the day may bring. I'm here to stay, whatever comes.
Heaven for one day with you.